The Talking Points podcast is produced in partnership with Fee Michael Gibson and ClinicalTrialResults.org.
Hi, Mike Gibson, Mike Linkoff, and we're talking about the SELECT trial looking at semaglutide in people who are living with obesity, who don't have diabetes, who've had prior cardiovascular disease. Mike, I think this is probably one of the hottest trials, if not the hottest trial at AHA. Talk to us a little bit about what you found.
Thank you, Michael. So as you know, the class of drugs, the GLP-1 receptor agonists, have been shown in diabetic patients, patients with diabetes, to have a potent effect on glycemic control, but also to reduce cardiovascular events. These drugs also reduce body weight and are used in management of overweight and obesity. But no drug, no lifestyle management, and even bariatric surgery, none have actually been shown in a randomized trial to reduce cardiovascular events, the excess risk of cardiovascular events associated with overweight and obesity. And that's important. And in fact, from the pharmacologic and lifestyle management, there have been trials that have actually failed. So this trial was a randomized study of patients with overweight or obesity, so BMI of greater than 27, who had pre-existing cardiovascular disease. Most had had myocardial infarction, some stroke or peripheral artery disease, but who did not have diabetes, so had a hemoglobin A1C of less than 6.5%, or were not on a glucose-lowering agent, and randomized semaglutide at the weight management dose, which is 2.4 milligrams once weekly subcutaneously, or matching placebo, to evaluate if it would reduce the risk of cardiovascular events in this population of patients. So it's a very large trial, 17,600 patients.
Wow, that's a big trial. Yeah.
And followed for an average of 40 months. And the results were quite I think, spectacular. So first of all, the quality of the trial in terms of data was quite high. You know, this was conducted, as most of these trials recently reported, during the COVID era. And yet we had vital status in over 99% of patients, and 96% finished the trial. That is, they either died during the trial, or they followed for their last visit. So it was a very high rate of compliance for the patients. And we showed that the primary endpoint, which was cardiovascular death, non-fatal myocardial infarction, non-fatal stroke, was reduced by 20%. So the hazard ratio was 0.8.
Well, Mike, that's an impressive relative risk reduction. What was the absolute risk reduction? And tell us a little bit about the number needed to treat.
So the risk in the placebo group was 8.0%, so 701 of 8,800 patients. And that was reduced to 6.5%. So 569 out of 8,800 patients in the control group. We didn't calculate specifically a number needed to treat, because obviously that depends upon the time point that you decide to do that. That's fairly arbitrary. But the absolute risk reduction was 1.5 percentage points over the average treatment period, which was over the average follow-up of the period, which was almost 40 months.
Right. Well, that's a pretty significant absolute risk reduction as well. Mike, were the components of the endpoint consistent in the benefit?
So we tested secondary endpoints in a gatekeeping strategy. So the first of those was cardiovascular death, and that was not significant. So that blocked our subsequent. So the hazard ratio for that was 0.85. But it was not significant. And then we also had the next was death, cardiovascular death plus a heart failure event, which had a similar hazard ratio, and then all-cause mortality, which was actually 0.8, hazard ratio 0.8. But those, because of the rigor of sequential statistical testing, we don't apply p-values to that.
Well, they are considered, I get it, they're considered exploratory, but curious people like me want to know, did they cross the line of unity?
So the confidence intervals did not cross the line of unity for those, nor did they. There was a very large risk reduction for myocardial infarction, for revascularization. Interestingly, and I say interestingly because stroke in the meta-analysis of the use of GLP-1s for patients with diabetes, stroke was actually the most risk reduction. But interestingly, in this trial, our hazard ratio was 0.93 for stroke, for non-fatal stroke, which did not cross the line. I mean, did cross the line of unity of one, so would not be considered, even though exploratory, significant. So whether or not this is real, or patients who don't have diabetes, maybe at less risk for stroke, or whether it's just within the play of chance.
Small numbers, yeah. And MI, though, what kind of hazard ratio are we talking about for MI?
So for myocardial infarction, the hazard ratio was 0.72.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was for non-fatal. And then for revascularization was 0.77.
Wow.
Revascularization.
Wow.
So, and then we looked at metabolic endpoints as well. So as you'd expect, this is a weight loss drug. Interestingly, the magnitude of weight loss was not as high as it was in dedicated weight loss trials. And this makes sense. This is a broad trial. These patients aren't being, having intensive managing. So there was about a 9.7% weight loss in the patients who were treated with semaglutide. So still substantial, particularly compared to other weight loss management strategies. But in the dedicated weight loss trials, weight loss as high as 14-15% have been achieved.
Right.
And then again, these weren't diabetic patients, but two-thirds of them were non-diabetic, had a hemoglobin A1C between 5.7 and 6.5%. So if we looked at those patients in terms of what was the risk of crossing the threshold to then thus be considered diabetic, it was 75% risk reduction. Their hazard ratio was about 0.2527 of crossing. Now, granted, that's on drug, so it doesn't meet strict criteria for prevention of diabetes because you're on the drug. But nevertheless, a substantially lower number of patients crossed over to reach that threshold of diabetes.
And lipids, LDLs, things like that.
LDL was reduced. It's very small. Triglycerides were reduced by about a 15% relative reduction. Mm-hmm. So that was the most, as you would expect for an agent that has an effect on glycemic control. Systolic blood pressure was actually reduced. So a placebo corrected was 3.3 millimeters, and that's a lot. But of course, the meta-analysis suggests a 2 millimeter decrease could have a substantial effect on vascular death over a couple of years. So that's an important reduction. Heart rate went up a little bit, 3 beats per minute. It's known. There's a known effect of GLP-1 on the SA node, but that's it's 3 beats per minute on average.
Yeah.
Also, in terms of safety issues, there were no unexpected safety findings.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, Mike. There have been some reports that, you might have a little bit of bowel obstruction in some patients, gastroparesis, none of that.
So there were no serious adverse events. There was no excess of serious adverse events associated with the semaglutide treated patients. And overall serious adverse events were actually lower, but those included, the cardiovascular events. But gastrointestinal or, other serious adverse events, there was no excess. There was a higher rate of discontinuation of the drug due to gastrointestinal effects in the semaglutide group versus the placebo group, no question. And that was primarily nausea, diarrhea. And there was a slightly higher rate, barely significant P of 0.04 of gallbladder related adverse events, which are also have been well described. But aside from that, none of the other seriousness, there was no increase in the risk of important psychiatric disorders, cancer, pancreatitis, and we had actually an adjudication for pancreatitis above and beyond with the investigators.
Yeah. And, you know, some people reported more bone fractures. You know, when you lose weight, the bone density may change and muscle mass may change. But
so I'd have to look if, because that one wasn't, that wasn't an event of special interest. And we did have targeted event collection. There have been, you know, a large number of trials of semaglutide. So I can't recall if that one was tested. But there had been concern with some other agents of renal failure, for example, because of dehydration. And there was no increase in renal failure.
The psychiatric part, I mean, you know, back when we had the anti-cannabinoids, there was an increased risk of suicide, but people tolerate this very well in terms of their
emotion. Yeah. Now, we excluded patients who had a severe psychiatric illness, as you know, I think is would be the ethical approach. You wouldn't. And also, we excluded patients who had acute pancreatitis within a few relatively short period of time, or had chronic, you know, ongoing pancreatitis. So the pancreatitis safety is in a context of avoiding the patients who are at the highest risk for that. And, you know, whether or not it would be higher is speculative. But so it was a set of exclusion criteria that we think really modeled how you would apply this in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Amazing, Mike. I mean, so, you know, obviously this will have to go through regulators for this kind of indication. But do you think this will change practice? I know my thoughts.
Yeah, I think it will. You know, the field of obesity and weight management has been struggling with the perception that this is a cosmetic or a behavioral or a self-control issue, and it's not. It's a cardiometabolic disease, and it is clearly associated with excess risk beyond the risk factors that are associated with excess risk, beyond, you know, hypertension, glycemic control, cholesterol, there's still an excess. So these were all patients who were treated for their underlying cardiovascular disease, and yet nevertheless had a 20% improvement in cardiovascular outcome on top of that. So it now changes the discussion. This is another pathway to improve cardiovascular outcome, to decrease cardiovascular risk in patients who are otherwise well treated who have overweight and obesity. So hopefully it will increase the availability or increase the awareness on the part of healthcare practitioners that when you have patients who are, you know, have cardiovascular disease, who have overweight and obesity and otherwise well treated, you can additionally reduce their risk. And of course, we hope that payers will look at it more, less as a cosmetic drug and more as a real management approach for a serious morbid and mortal outcomes.
Well, living with obesity is not a moral failing. It is a complex disease. And I think this is just amazing. You know, the results you've shown, it's really a landmark study. Congratulations, Mike. I do think it should change practice. And I hope insurers and payers will allow that. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your interest.